Now, you talked about first arriving on campus on the train. Was this back in the days when rush would happen on the train and fraternity people would approach you while you were still on the train?
As far as I know, not.
No?
And the rushing of fraternities was it just didn't happen. I know that the only rushing I had was, a couple of fraternities, but because of my grades, as I remember, our club had the valedictorian of that class when I came in. They had top students in Arcades Club at that time. And it wasn't until I was here, I guess, a semester or something like that. And so I wasn't particularly interested, and the only rushing that I saw was from a couple of fraternities, and I finally decided, since this group had the highest grades and so forth and seemed to be a studious group, that I'd join that. There were enough students belonging to fraternities. There were Greeks and non-Greeks. What did they call the non-Greeks? Barbs. I'd say about half the student body were fraternity people. And it's pretty much settled down in the matter of two semesters. And everybody seemed to know where they were wanted and where they would go. That was it.
What does barbs mean?
Barbarians. Greeks and barbarians. So, see, if you were not a fraternity man, you were a barbarian. And if you were a fraternity man, you were a Greek.
And why would someone choose to not be in a fraternity?
Money, maybe. Depending upon what their family did, the barbarians, as we didn't call them barbs occasionally, live in the dormitory. So I think you had to live in the dormitory for a year, if I remember correctly, at least 6 months. And you got to know the people that were in the dormitory. And so you could either stay on in the dormitory if you wanted to another year, or you could go out in the city, or you could join a fraternity. And so I picked the Arcades Club. It's convenient. And I didn't particularly want to live at the fraternity house. That was another problem. For financial reasons, most fraternities had to have students living in the house, so that if you joined a fraternity, as I remember, your first semester, there was some requirement by the fraternity that you'd come and live in the fraternity.
But so, you didn't want to live in the fraternity?
I didn't initially. In other words, I wanted to see what... After all, they had the same cooks, you know, and you had to eat in the fraternity. And our food was... We had what we called the beanery. And two dorms.
What was the beanery?
The dining hall for the students. In other words, you could eat in the beanery. I think, I can't remember what it was, $30 a month or something like that. It was relatively economical.
And do you remember where the beanery was?
It was right over about where the bookstore is, as I remember.
Okay.
That was a beanery. Mm-hmm. And now, was a relatively small town here, just two colleges supported the town. One unusual thing, clothing. Back in those days, dress code at Washington Lee, everybody had to wear a jacket or a lettered sweater. In other words, if you made a letter, you could wear a monogram sweater. But the dress code was very stringent at Washington Lee. And I know one of the nice things about winning a letter was to be able to wear the sweater occasionally and not have to wear a jacket. Another thing that I remember too is you could leave your, the honor code was much stricter than it was. You could books, throw them down, and you'd find those books would be there a week later. Nobody touched anybody else's gear or, and so the honor code was very stringent in those days. The dress code was very stringent in those days.
That was my next question to you, was about the honor system. Can you remember how that was first explained to you, how you came to know about the honor system?
Oh, I can't remember what the first, it was understood when you came here, the honor code was very strict. You knew it. As far as I know, they didn't have any lectures or on the honor code, but it was very strict. I guess perhaps as a result of discipline, and I can't remember any cheating. The professors would go out of the room, and as far as I know, I never saw any cheating at Washington Lee on grades or anything else, which was unbelievable, because that was drilled into us.
Well, it's still very much in effect today.
I trust. I don't think it's quite as stringent as it was back then. And I believe it was enforced by the students themselves some way or another. Mm-hmm. Exactly how it was enforced, I don't know. But it was a very stringent code, and I still remember books and clothing and everything else. So you'd throw it down on the corner, and it would be there the next morning. And you didn't have to worry about anybody stealing any of your property. As far as I know, there's never a theft around.
Well, my last question. Do you remember when you first arrived here, what your sense of this place was, as the campus, what your first impression was when you first walked onto the campus?
Well, it was fairly lonesome coming from Florida and not having any Virginia connections. And I was glad to see that we at least had some of the boys from my high school up here. But it was lonesome as far as a southern boy coming up here to school away from home, and I know I was always glad to go down to the post office and see what mail I had. I don't know how much mail I got. I guess I got a fair amount of mail, but I guess it was a lonesome feeling having been at home in my high school days. Trying to think of anything other of and of course too the local life here in Lexington was negligible. In other words, if you went to church, you didn't you weren't associating with any of the townspeople. In other words, Washington Lee was the activity that you were bound up in. You didn't get to know many of the townspeople. I remember, too, in the early days, the stringency of the dress code, and the salesman would come of Stetson clothes, for example, would come to the Dutch Inn, and they would have showings. And oh, another thing, pressing club. All of us belonged to pressing club. Our clothes were pressed. Could you imagine twice a week on jackets? I think it's $2 a month or something like that. You got a jacket a week pressed, and everybody belonged to a jacket pressing club.
And would they come to you?
They would collect the garments and bring them back. That was a ritual.
Really? Nobody told me about that before. That's really interesting.
The pressing clubs, and I can't remember the cost, but it was nominal. But I don't know of anybody that didn't belong to the pressing club. Now you think about that today.
Wouldn't that be a nice service?
Wouldn't. You just don't. Well, I don't know how the clothes stand up today like they did back in those days, but the pressing club was one of the requirements here. Pressing club, the post office, the Camels had this, I can't think of the name, not the PX, but it's the corner store down here where they sold items, books, sort of a bookstore, and that was one of the establishments in Lexington.
You know, there's one other person I had on my list that I haven't asked you about. Did you know Miss Annie Jo White?
Not really. In other words, she was out, can't think of it, and I never had any, did she house girls during the?
I think she took in students, and she was the librarian, and she, of course, ran Fancy Dress for a long time, started Fancy Dress.
No, I really didn't know. Pedic was a treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, laundry. The colored, I don't know if it's colored folks or not. No, I probably, there was a family, a woman that took your laundry. And I don't know, maybe it was $3 a month or something like that. And I remember I'd give her a check. Can you imagine giving a person a check for $3? And she had raised the $3 to $8. And of course, my checkbook didn't balance, and I went back to the bank, and she hadn't changed the three on the writing, but she'd changed the three figure. And I said, well, how can you charge me $8 for this when in writing it's three, and that was obviously not my figures. Well, they got her in, and they read the riot act to her on the matter of raising a $3 check to $8. And so it meant I had a checking account. The fraternity houses were just starting to be built, the nice ones. And most of the fraternity houses were frame houses like the Arcades Club or your alumni headquarters down here now.
Now, were they all called clubs then?
No. The Arcades was the only one. And we'd petitioned to DU to be accepted as a fraternity. And they never referred to it as a club, they just said Arcades. And so, and it was a convenient location right next to the
church. Was it an official fraternity when you were here?
Yes, it was an official fraternity. It was the only non-Greek fraternity on the campus.
Oh. So, are you saying it became Greek while you were a member of it?
It became Greek, I guess, the year or so after I graduated, because we were petitioning DU for national status, and it did become national, I guess, in 29 or 30, something like that. And of course, I guess it's disappeared since that time.
So while you were a member, it was strictly a Washington and Lee fraternity?
Fraternity, right. Local fraternity. And the only local fraternity on the campus. All the rest were Greek.
And prior to that time, had there been a number of local fraternities? Or?
I guess all the fraternities were local at one time. You remember K.A. was born here, and that was the usual process. They would petition the national to become a member. And I guess K.A. was initially started here, and was any other fraternity? Maybe so, I don't know. But anyhow, what they normally do would they form this club, and the club would petition the national fraternity and be accepted, and that's the way the Arcades Club. We had a little own little badge. Had an A and A. A this way and an A below. Arcades AMBO.
AMBO?
No. L.
Arcades AMBO.
And stands for Brothers Both.
Well, that is an entirely new one on me. I've never talked to anybody who belonged to a local fraternity.
Local fraternity, yeah.
Well, we've made it through my list of questions. Anything else on Henry Louis Smith? Now, you're probably the only person I'm going to talk to who knew Henry Louis Smith. I'd love to know more about him.
He was somewhat a distant figure on the campus. As far as I know, he did not actively become involved with the students. Now, Dean Gillum came here during my period, and I'm not sure he came here as dean. I think he became dean after he came here. I don't know, but Dean Gillum was really Mattingly and Gillum, and the professors were the people that associated with your student body. And of course, the law students had their law school had its faculty. And I remember, you know, McDowell of Washington Week in Review. Mm-hmm. Charlie McDowell was the son of Professor McDowell, who I guess was dean, I'm not sure. And they tell me he was here at that time. They used to call him, the law students used to call him Footnote McDowell. Footnote McDowell, because he was the son of the dean of the law school. Charlie McDowell, a kid.
Do you remember him as a kid? Did you know him?
No, I didn't know him. I don't remember knowing any of the kids around. I know that some of the professors had. And who was our, we had a fraternity faculty advisor who just died here rather recently at the age of 100.
Oh, Mr. Latour?
Yeah, Robert Latour was our faculty advisor.
Oh.
And our guiding light at that particular time and our representative on the...
He must have been quite young then.
I assume he was.
Because he graduated in 1916, something like that. 1915, 1916.
I don't know. I remember, too, I tried out for the Rhodes Scholarship examination, and no Washington Lee student had ever held a Rhodes Scholarship from Virginia. University of Virginia had always garnered the Rhodes Scholarship examination until, what's our president we were talking about who was president of the University of Virginia?
Edgar Shannon.
Edgar Shannon was a Rhodes Scholar, as I remember, and the only Rhodes Scholar. Now, did he go to Washington Lee?
Mm-hmm.
Guess he did. He was the first Rhodes Scholar, I think, that Washington Lee had. And I know I traveled on the Rhodes Scholarship examination. I did not, they said it was useless to try in Virginia because of the University of Virginia tie. And in Maryland, I'd been in Maryland only 6 months when I, 3 months I guess it was, and they said I didn't have enough residence in Maryland to take it. So I took the Rhodes Scholarship examination, quote unquote, down at Gainesville, Florida, from the state of Florida. And my brother was the then president of the student body down there, and I thought I had a great chance. And it turned out that the son of the president of Rollins College was given the scholarship that year down there. And we always thought it was prejudicial the son of a president of a college would get it rather than somebody else. But that's the story on the Rhodes Scholarship.
Well, I want to thank you. I know it's time for your next session to start up, and I don't want to have it be late. But I really want to thank you for taking some time with me. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you.
Indeed, you're welcome, and let me know if there's anything you want clarified.
I will.
I think the nicest thing that happened in World War II, after leaving Washington Lee, I enlisted in the Maryland National Guard, and the captain of this outfit said, "You have too much education to be a private. I'll make you a private first class." So I went in the service at $1.05 a drill instead of $1 as a result of my education down here. And in World War II, I happened to be at the right spot at the right time, and I became a full colonel in 1944 with no more than 3 days of military schooling, and that's on gas schooling. So that's rather, VMI did well in World War II with Marshall and Patton and some of the others, but I thought I did fairly well considering the fact that I never had military training.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Indeed, you're welcome. Appreciate it.